So we're looking at the Mishnah here on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. And we did the Mishnah already, so we don't have to review the Mishnah, but just the first line of the Mishnah so we can tune in on the Sugya. The Mishnah says, Mishnah Nigmar Dino, after the Gemar Din of the Rotzeach B'Shoge, Mes Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol died. Hareze Eino Golan. So it's interesting, normally the Mises Kohen Gadol takes place after the Rotzeach reaches the Ir Miklat. Here the Rotzeach didn't even go into the Ir Miklat. But once there was Gemar Din, Mises Kohen Gadol is enough to alleviate him from the Chiyuv Golos. So we're going to fast forward now to the Gemara. Gemara says, my time up. What's the reason, what's the source, what's the basis for this halacha that the Mises Kohen Gadol is enough to exempt the Rotzeach from Golos, even though Lamaisa, he had a Gemar Din, but he never went into Golos. Or Abaye, so Abaye presents a Kal V'Chomer. What's the Kal V'Chomer of Abaye? Uma Misha Golok Far. If a person's already in Golos, Yotze, with the death of the Kohen Gadol, he goes out of Golos. So you see the power of the Kohen Gadol's death, that even though he's already in Golos, he can get out of Golos. Akshav, here in the case where there's a Gemar Din below Gola, he hasn't yet gone into Golos, Eino Din, Shalo Yigla. So let's just analyze this logic that underlies the Kal V'Chomer, because it makes sense. The Gemara is saying that Mises Kohen Gadol is so effective, it has such potency, that even after he went into Golos, it could remove him from Golos, free him from the Ir Miklat. That much more so if he hasn't even gone into Golos yet. Does that make sense to you?
No.
Well, you started saying something, Jonathan, but... you've already seen the Sugya. I don't know.
What?
You already did the Sugya.
So sometimes I'm skeptical of Gemara,
okay, but tell me why you're skeptical. You should be skeptical.
I'm skeptical of whether the idea is considered like a real idea, but sometimes when it's immediately rejected right afterwards.
Yeah, but the Gemara eventually is going to accept a buy. So we want to, you know, I think it's worth our effort.
How can he go out if something isn't in yet?
How can he go out if he's not in yet? Because you're not willing to say that the shlug up to Abaye is the fact that once he goes into Golos, it's a lot easier. He suffered, you know, he gave his due measure, and therefore it's a lot easier to get him out of Golos. That's not, you're not willing to say that. What you want to say is, how can we get him out of Golos when he never went into Golos?
Because his status is, once he's in Gemar Din, it's as if he is in Golos. You know,
yeah,
he's technically been delivered.
What's engendered by the Gemar Din?
No, that's not by it.
Not Golos itself yet, but...
That's
where he goes. Correct? A Chiyuv goes. Okay. So the Gemara wants to know, would Mises Kohen Gadol neutralize the Chiyuv goes? And Abai says, that's a cinch. You know, it's much more difficult and challenging to remove a person once he's already in goals. It's like he's in jail already. You know, get him out of jail.
And if the Pasuk in the Torah talks about the fact that that is the trigger, it has to do with kapara, well, that's just happened. So why go through the process of actually physically entering the Ir Miklat and then waiting for the next one, which would be another 50 years? It's not fair. Kapara is just now heard.
But would the counter argument to Abaye be the fact that at least let him go into Golos? Meaning, why not give him... What's the purpose of Golos? Let's backtrack. You remember we discussed this on many occasions. First and foremost, it protects him from the Golodom. What else? What was the second dimension of
Kapara?
It's a Kapara, correct? It's an Odesh, it's a Kapara. In fact, we had a Gemara that suggested that maybe in the case of Adam Zomavin, who testified against someone of these kind of Golos, it wouldn't be enough to send the Adam Zomavin through the law of Kasha Zomavin to Golos. That would be going off, that would be letting him off too easy, because then they'd get a Kapara when they did amazing, they did something deliberate, whereas the Rotzeach, who gets Kapara through Ir Miklat, at least he only did it for Shoge, he was unintentional. So we see there's an element of Kapara, so maybe the Mises Kohen Gadol is meaningful once the Machaper kicks in. When does the Machaper kick in? Not with the Gemara Din, but after he's
experiencing it, actually.
Right. So he's got to, you know, experience, like you say, that suffering of Golus for at least one day or whatever it might be. So that's why I think the Gemara is going to. So again, right now, Abaye is presenting this Kal Vachomer. The Gemara now says the Dilma, maybe we can counter against this Kal Vachomer. Hide the Gola. This person who already went into Golus, Ichaperle. Because again, in order to achieve his Kapara, the Torah doesn't designate a minimum amount of time he has to spend in the Yom Mikvah. Correct? The Kohen Gadol could die a minute after he gets to the Yom Mikvah. So there's already a Kapara for that moment that he enters into the Yom Mikvah. But hide the logo, but this person who never went into Golus, he only had a Gemara Din, but he didn't go into Golus. Lo, he didn't have a Kapara at all. Who says that Mises Kohen Gadol could be operative, could be effective without any element of Golus, with any element of Kapara? In other words, what the Gemara is vacillating back and forth here is whether or not Mises Kohen Gadol could be effective without Golus. Abai thinks that Mises Kohen Gadol can certainly be effective without Golus. Meaning, there are two elements here of Mises Kohen Gadol. One is to exempt him from Golus, and the other is to get him out of the Yer Mikloh once he's already in. So Abai postulates that when he goes into the Yer Mikloh, he's already a Golus. And it's very challenging, and it requires a great deal of halachic power, if you will, to remove the shame nigla. You know, he's already a nigla. Nigla means he's already in the state of golus. But if he hasn't, if he doesn't have a shame nigla, a shame gola, if he's not a gola yet, then all you have is an abstract chiyuv golus. But the person himself hasn't changed his status yet. He's not a gola until he goes into the mikvah. How much easier it is to alleviate him from the chiyuv golus. And the Gemara says, no, you're missing one point here, Rabbi, and that is that Mises Kohen Gadol is the end of a process. It's the clincher. But what begins the process? Yeah. Golus itself. Golus before. I'll give you an example. You know, there are two stages to marriage. What are they called? Erusin and Nisuin. Or Erusin and Chuppah. Chuppah is Nisuin. Now, could you imagine if a person implements Nisuin or Chuppah before Kiddushin? And Gemara has such a case. But logically, it would be impossible because Nisuin is what? The clincher. You follow what I mean? It's the second stage. If you don't have the first stage, you can't get to the second stage. The Gemara thinks that the first stage is Golus. Now you've already been, you're well on the path to Kapara. What has to take you sort of all the way, you know, across the goal yard, the goal line, that you're complete, you achieve complete Kapara? Mises Kohen Gadol. Mises Kohen Gadol is the end of the process. But if you haven't begun the process, then Mises Kohen Gadol is not effective in and of itself. Mises Kohen Gadol, the Gemara argues, is not an independent Poter Migolus, or Meshachir of Golus. It doesn't remove the Golus. Whereas Abai says, no, what are you talking about? I'm not interested in whether Mises Kohen Gadol is independent or not. What I know is that a person is already a Golem, the Fall, he's in the Yer Mikloh, and yet the Mises Kohen Gadol takes him out of that status, that state of being a Golem. Says Abai, how much more so if you don't even have the status of a Golem? You only have an abstract chiyuv of Golus. Certainly the Mises Kohen Gadol should be effective.
Why do you refer to it as abstract? I mean, it's intangible. You got that.
No, I mean to say abstract as opposed to a practical. No, he hasn't yet experienced. You know, you can't call him a Golus. You can call him a Mechuyev Liglos, but not a Golus.
But obviously that's critical, because I assume even a buyer would say if there hasn't been a Mardi, there would be no question that we have to come in. If the Mardi came later after the Mardi, right? The Mishnah says, Mishni Gemar Din.
Right.
If you're before the Gemar Din, and you're nothing, you're still an adjudication. It hasn't been established that you're a Chim, that you're a Chim. So then if the Kohen Gadol is, it has no effect on you.
Right.
So this clearly...
Right, the Kohen Gadol's death is only effective after the Chim goes, and Abai argues that that's an easy process. Once you have a Chim goes, but that's all you have is a Chim goes. you're not a Gola, as I call it, but fall in actuality, then it's easy for the Kohen Gadol's death to be a poter, to be a Meshach. Abayis not emphasizing Kapor.
When does the same Gola start?
What do you say?
When does the same Gola start?
With Gemarti.
But you haven't had Gemarti.
No, he did.
In this case, he had a Gemara Din. Take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mishnigmar Dino, there already was a Gemara Din. He's chayav to go into Golos. Has he gone into Golos yet? No. The Kohen Gadol dies. You know what? He doesn't even have to go into Golos.
Right.
And Abai says it's a Kal Vachomer, because if the Kohen Gadol's death has the power to bring him out of the state of a Gola, then how much more so when he's only theoretically, that's like I call it conceptually, he's a Gola, but in practicality he's not a Gola. Certainly the Mises Kohen Gadol should be effective. Look at the power of the Kohen Gadol. And the Gemara says, wait a minute, Abai, you're not taking into consideration one important fact. It ain't what? Kapara.
I'm not sure if there's a machlokes about this, but once the Gemara Din had occurred and he's on his way to Gullus, to the Eretz Miklat, the Goladam can kill him. I don't know, maybe before, right? But at least after, everyone agrees after, right? So there was already like a status, he's 100% in the status of being Shogeg and on his way, you know what I mean? Like
the Gemara Din, it definitely establishes a chiyuv golus, and if he doesn't go into the Miklat, he can the Goladam can take the law into his hands, as we've discussed many times. But whether or not the Mises Kohen Gadol should be effective, that's a whole other question. In any event, now the Gemara goes back to attack the attacker and to defend Abai. The Gemara says the following: me the golus come chapra. You're assuming that the Mises Kohen Gadol is only the end of the process, but the process fundamentally begins with Golos? That's not true. Mises Kohen Gadol the Mechaper. The Mises Kohen Gadol is an independent Mechaper. And it's effective on its own. So basically there are three stages in this Gemara. Stage one, which is Abaye's postulating that it's a lot more challenging to remove a Gola once he's in the Eretz Miklat, he's a Gola, than it is to remove his Chiyuv Golos, to get himself into Golos. That's step number one. Step number two is Gemara says that let's look at this from the perspective of Kapara. From the perspective of Kapara, perhaps the Kohen Gadol's death is only a Gemar Kapara. It's the last stage of the Mechaper. You need the first stage, namely Golos. So in and of itself, Mises Kohen Gadol would not be effective enough to remove the Chiyuv Golos because he needs Kapara. And step number three is that no, forget about the Golos. The Mechaper is Mises Kohen Gadol. Inherent, the Kapara is inherent in the death of the Kohen Gadol. The death of the Kohen Gadol is an independent mechanism that works on its own. And once the Kohen Gadol dies, then there is Kapara, and therefore, if there's Kapara, there's no need for him to go into Golos. Those are the three stages of the Gemara. Now let's go back to the Mishnah for a moment and read the next line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Im ad shalom nigmar dino, mace Kohen Gadol." So as you said before very well, Alan, that the death of the Kohen Gadol before the Gemara Din is meaningless. But here it is meaningful, because what happened before the Gemara Din? Manu acher tachta. They appointed another Kohen Gadol to replace the one that died. So again, Kohen Gadol A, we'll call him, was alive and well at the time of the Ritzicha, but he was not alive and well at the time of the Gemara Din. Kohen B was not in office at the time of the Ritzicha. He was not a Kohen Gadol. But on the other hand, he was appointed before the Gemara Din, so he was in office at the time of the Gemara Din. So with regard to the death of the first Kohen Gadol, since he died before the Gemara Din, there's no question that his death could not be mechaper. He cannot alleviate the rotzeach of his chiyuv golos because there was no chiyuv golos. Chiyuv golos is pending the Gemara Din. But if, on the other hand, we look at the second Kohen Gadol and analyze his situation, he was not there as a Kohen Gadol at the time of the Ritzicha. He has to link up with this rotzeach. How does he link up with the rotzeach? Through what mechanism? Gemara Din. So the Gemara says the following, Minani Nili. I think the Gemara is very bothered by this. If you want to connect the Kohen Gadol to to this Rotzeach, you should connect him back to the Maisa Ritzicha. If at the time of Ritzicha itself he was not a Kohen Gadol, he was not in office, who cares if he was in office at the time of the Gemar Din? The Gemar Din is only an implementation of the Chiyuv Golos as a result of the Ritzicha, but this Kohen Gadol was not in office at the time of the Ritzicha. So you must have a source for it. Omer Rav Kahana, I have a source for this. The Omer Kra, the Torah says, the Yashav Bo Admos HaKohen HaGadol Asher Moshach Oso B'Shemen HaKodosh. Now I'm going to translate this literally, and it's going to sound the strangest thing in the world. He, meaning Rotzeach, shall live in the Ir Mikvot until the Kohen Gadol dies, who was appointed or anointed by the Rotzeach. You follow what I'm saying? The Asher Moshach Oso, which is describing a person who activated something. The verb here is Moshach. But who's the subject of Moshach? Who did the Mashiach? If you read the Pasuk and translate it literally, it was the Rotzeach who did the Mashiach. That doesn't make one bit of sense. The Kohen, the Rotzeach is not in charge of Mashiach's Kohen Gadol. So that's what Gemara asks. The Chihu Moshko? Could you take this Pasuk literally? He, meaning the Rotzeach, is Moshe, he anoints the Kohen Gadol and appoints him? However, but rather we have to reinterpret the Pasuk. What does it mean? That this Kohen Gadol, Shenimshach B'Yamav, who was appointed during the days of the Rotzeach. No, it's not that the Rotzeach appointed him. He was appointed and he was anointed by someone else, obviously. But it happened during the period of time of the Rotzeach. Now, what does that mean?
Before the Gemar Din, after the act of murder, and before the Gemar Din?
Oh, that's exactly it. The words Nimshach B'Yamav, according to Rav Kahana, are describing that period of time which is subsequent to the Ritzicha. Meaning, he's already called a Rotzeach. Right? The Pasuk itself calls him a Rotzeach. And he's only a Rotzeach after the Ritzicha was already implemented. So what does it mean, B'Yamav? B'Yamav shall be. At the time of whom? Of the Rotzeach. Well, it's got to be after the Ritzicha. No, but if it's after the Ritzicha, so how does this coin go to link up to the situation, the status of the Rotzeach? And the only answer to that could be Gemar Din, that this Kohen Gadol was appointed before the Gemar Din. Alright. So the Gemara says the following. My Havi Leila Meva. You're telling me that the death of the Kohen Gadol, again, this is the Kohen Gadol who was not appointed and was not in office at the time of the Ritzicha. He was only in office at the time of what? The Gemar Din. And his death somehow is a kapara. Why does this Kohen Gadol deserve to die? If you remember, we had a whole discussion earlier on Omer Aleph about the fact that Kohen Gadol, in a sense, deserves to die, and that's why the mothers of the Kohen Gadol used to bring food and so forth to the Rotzim, so they shouldn't pray that the Kohen Gadol would die. Why would they pray and be effective? The answer is because the Kohen Gadol was guilty; he could have prevented the murder. Yeah, but in this case, the Kohen Gadol wasn't even in office at the time of the murder, so he couldn't be guilty in any sense or form for the murder taking place. He wasn't a Kohen Gadol at the time of the murder. So my Havi Leila Meva, what guilt can we attribute to this Kohen Gadol, who was not in office at the time of the Ritzicha? He was only in office at the time of Gemar Din. Was he amiss at something that took place at the time of Gemar Din? And the Gemara gives the most amazing answer. And I've been racking my brains on this for a couple hours now. Hayo levakesh rachamim sheyigmar dino lizchus. You know why this Kohen Gadol is guilty? He was appointed before the Gemar Din. He should have prayed to God such that the final decision would have vindicated this Rotzeach. Again, are we saying that the Rotzeach is not guilty of Ritzicha? We have two witnesses. We have two witnesses.
The Sanhedrin would have said he was less to choke.
They'll say it's cut off the onus and let him go.
But again, it wasn't covered for the others than that. You know, you can't pray for something. Can a Kohen Gadol be expected to pray for someone who's guilty of a crime that he's not guilty of the crime. He is guilty of the crime. In other words, keep in mind, Rabbi, said the judgment was a fair judgment. We're not questioning the justice here. The justice, you know, everything went, you know, there were the best thing was made up of 23 judges, and the witnesses came in and they testified, and they came to the conclusion that he was a rotzeach b'shogeg, and therefore he's kind of ghost. And they knocked the ground with that, and that's it. They decided that we have to condemn him for golus. El what? The Kohen Gadol could have prayed to Hashem that the Gemara Din would have come out differently, and he would have been alleviated from golus.
How could it come out differently? That's what I mean.
How could it come out differently?
No, this is kaput.
There is a victim. There were witnesses to the fact that the death was somehow caused by the rotzeach. But well, that's why
yeah, you know what I'm saying? All the evidence is in.
When you say his favor, you're saying like...
I'm saying that, yeah,
Karov La'onis.
But you can say maybe it wasn't his fault.
You're suggesting Karov La'onis. Now he doesn't find his kapara. I mean, because the Beis Din said it's Karov La'onis and it's not Shogeg, he doesn't need the kapara anymore? How can he...
But in reality, was he Karov La'onis or not?
No, I
can't see how the prayers of the Kohen Gadol are going to change the reality. Either he was Karov La'onis or he wasn't.
No, because you're talking about Machria, the Beis Din, the 70 people, 71, whatever it is, to the favor. That's the way it sounds. In other words,
right.
The facts are the facts. Yeah. How they decide... They may be swerved, sir, whatever, tilted
but
to one side.
How could the prayer of man change the verdict of someone who's guilty to be innocent?
But it's not for his benefit.
He is guilty.
No.
What was the question?
What would you say if a guy came?
Hey, listen, Jonathan, if you're a skeptic, here's the place I want you to be a skeptic. You know, now I want Jonathan Rose to stand up and say, I am a skeptic.
Well, first I am.
He's
first
guilty of the show.
Unless you want to defend tomorrow, then that's okay.
All right. Well, you said that you used the word objectively. But objectively, he was a murderer. So, or the show game. So, what do you imagine that person came to you and said, "Rabbi, I killed a person by accident. We went to trial. There was a court, and there was ruled Karov La'onis. I don't have to go to Golos. But I know in my heart of hearts that I really feel guilty, and I want to go off to Golos on my own. What would you tell him?
No.
You would say no. There's a Gemar Din. That's the Gemar Din.
Right.
The Gemar Din establishes the reality." It's not that it's trying to figure out the truth, it's that it establishes the reality.
I agree with you, Jonathan, it establishes reality, but it establishes reality to the sky of goals. And that establishment is based on the facts and the things, the evidence that came in front of Bezdin. You can't distort the evidence. All the prayer in the world will not change the facts on the ground. So who you're influencing Almighty God through your prayers to what? To violate justice? To distort justice?
I don't think there's an absolute measure of justice.
I think that if you pray that he should find his kapara without having to go into exile, then maybe the Beis Din would fit that reality and give him Karov La'onis.
But again, I'm just asking one... This is my... Again, I don't want to repeat myself too many times, but what exactly took place?
He really did a shogeg.
Did a shogeg. And I don't think the Gemara's questioning that. He did it for shogeg. Beis Din handed down a verdict, and you're talking about the best judges, the highest court in the land. And the decision was that he, you know, based on the evidence that we have, he did it.
I think you can have
so what are you going to tell me? Pray that they shouldn't come to the right conclusion?
No, they came.
Pray that there should be a distortion of God.
Maybe he didn't make that prayer. Yeah. Maybe he did. So there's a presumption that if he made such a prayer, that's what would have happened.
Okay, you're just making my question even stronger because, okay, the prayer of the Kohen Gadol is very powerful, it's effective, but it can't change justice if the decision was made by Beis Din, because all the evidence came in and he should be chayav golus. How is the prayer of the Kohen Gadol meaningful to restore justice?
I don't think that the statement that if Beis Din... I would agree with the statement that if Beis Din convicted this murder of killing Bashogeg, that would be a just verdict. I completely agree with that.
Right.
But the assumption from that is the only just verdict, I don't think is true. That you can have a situation in which you have two possible just verdicts. A U.S. thing borderline, it can go either way, and either one, like if it went to an appeal, either one would not be overturned on appeal. That both of them were just.
But can I suggest, I could piggyback on what you said?
Because you took that borderline case, but let me ask you, let's say you set up yourself.
I already won. Once you admit that there's a borderline case, I already win.
No, but I'm asking you, are we saying that the Kohen Gadol is guilty for these borderline cases, or are we saying he's guilty for all cases?
Well, wait, just a moment. We're saying that the mothers of the Kohen Gadol went and gave food to these people.
No.
Why? Because maybe they're praying against him. Well, what do you mean they're praying against him? What do you mean they're not allowed to stand up? Maybe they do have a right to stand up. What level do they have to stand up? Maybe you should have prayed that they should have been non-guilty. Well, we already said the word maybe, so maybe they don't have a right to stand up. Yeah, I'm going to give them food just to be on the safe side.
I don't know why you're excusing the food here. Again, let's just focus on the guilt of the Kohen Gadol for not omitting prayer. If you're saying that maybe the Rotzeach is not guilty, I can think about that. But I'm asking, what about the following scenario? You give me the list of all the ingredients and the conditions that have to be met for a person to be chayav golos, and I check them off. You know, imagine if a person would say, you know, tell me, Rebbe, give me halachos. What do I have to do in order to be chayav golos? And he follows them to the T. You know, he slips on the banana peel. It's Bederek Yerida. He did everything he had to do, and he's chayav golos. So you're telling me that it's a borderline case? It's not a borderline case.
There's a Gemara, I believe, which says that one of the criteria to be a member of Sanhedrin was they tested you, and you had to come up with 70 ways to be mitayer at Sheretz. Now, Sheretz is Tamei, it's an explicit pasuk in the Torah. I already got to come up with 70 ways. But that's what we do. We come up with ways. In other words, if there was a halachic need, we come up with something. Just like a camp with football, and Het Mechira, and selling your comments on Pesach, we come up with some way.
But why do you want to come up with such a thing?
All I'm saying is that you can come up with a way, and it would be a
choice. So if you're telling me that he doesn't really deserve it, fine. But if you tell me that he does deserve it, what motivates us to want to alleviate someone from a few dollars?
To be just.
Can I just follow up on what you said? Just because maybe, like, if you're saying, suggesting that both,
that they find that the truth,
that they're both possibly, that you're saying, it could be this way, that way. What was the matara? The matara was that he finds kapara. That's the goal of going in. If the Kohen Gadol can pray hard enough to act as a kapara or be a kapara without him dying, and through his prayer, and maybe the based in won't need to reach the verdict of $70.
No, you might be right, Rebecca, but the only problem is I think
because justice has to be served. If
says,
the guy's exonerated, justice is not served.
Says, no, she need my dino l'schutz. She need my dino l'schutz. It sounds like his prayer, the Kohen's prayer, is going to influence the decision making process of the judges.
Well, he's praying. Whatever. Right. Here's the two issues. They're whether the effect of his prayer and the fact that he prayed. Mm-hmm. So he didn't know the effect of his prayer, that it was a clear case or whatever. He didn't pray. Because
no, but I'm asking,
pray,
what should he pray for? You know, you're finding him guilty of not praying. So obviously you're predicating that he should have prayed. What should he be praying for? He should be praying that Beis Din should hand down an innocent verdict for someone who's guilty? It doesn't make any sense to me. So the whole premise is Gemara is that he should have been praying. Why should he be praying? Again, if you want to say he should be praying that the judges should be very smart and they should be, you know, they should be absolutely objective about the decision and come to the right true decision, that's one thing. But your praying, says the Gemara, and I just translate the three words, Sheyigmar Dino L'Schus. Why should he be praying Sheyigmar Dino L'Schus when he deserves to go into God?
So you're saying that the Gemara Din is just like a formula that has no, there's no question what will be the result of the Gemara Din?
Yeah, I mean, we learned
that. I'm not sure. Maybe there's no result. I'm saying that the Gemara Din was a very serious, heavy decision on the part of Beis Din, and they took into consideration all the evidence, and they induced, you know, they invited the subpoena, the Adiv, and everything.
But they had to make a decision one way or the other.
Right, but the decision was a clear-cut decision, and the reality seems to be that they made a right decision. We're not saying, again, unless you tell me that
we learned in the last parak, like with Rabbi Akiva, that says the Bible's on a bed, and I would never have executed anyone ever, that there are different judicial philosophies. And there were judicial philosophies, legitimate judicial philosophies, that executed just decisions by never giving any death penalty.
Okay, but this is just
so,
the death.
So now you're saying something a little bit different than what I think what you said before, and this gets me a little bit more excited, that maybe we want to avoid goals at all costs. Well, let's in our mind, and we'll get back to this point in a minute, let's equate goals with Misa. It's another form of capital punishment. Again, that's a very iffy kind of, you know,
we're almost sentencing him to death by allowing the Goldam to kill him.
Right.
Whereas if you gave him onus, he's
what John can't be killed. Saying is, we have to bend over backwards to see to it that a death sentence will never be issued by as a verdict of this. But that's, again, it takes us a long way, Jonathan, and I applaud it. But I don't think it, you know, I don't think it what's the word I mean? It surrounds. Passes third base.
I don't think that equation needs to be 100% to say that it's like Mises does it. We never actually explained in the last paragraph of why are we getting people to bend over backwards to avoid a capital punishment. We never really explained that. So whatever reason that is of why we don't
remember about it. I don't remember right now what we said, but
he actually quotes from that's even better. He quotes from Golos. The quotes a pasuk from the parsha of Golos that says,
I thought what Jonathan said was brilliant, because when the Beis Din says he is b'shogeg and he's not b'skut of Korobotus, it's like handing a death sentence.
Right.
It's really
close. We have to bend over backwards to avoid a death sentence.
He's getting
how this works through the Beis Din. How does the prayer of the Kongudel impact on Almighty God so that he in turn will have impact on the judges and they will hand down an innocent verdict when in truth all the evidence is in and he's due? So I want to share with you here in a footnote. Give me 1 second, Alan.
Yeah.
The Iyun Yaakov. Are you ready for this? I mean, I'm going to present to you the Yaakov where I understand it. I think he is bothered by the same question that we have. How can you expect the Gondor to pray that the decision of Bezin should be other than what should be the decision of Bezin? And he says that the prayer would be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give into the hearts of all the Dayanim together that he's tied Golos. That it should be a unanimous decision on the part of the judges that he's tied Golos. And the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Zayin that if there's no dissension, then a person is alleviated from the punishment. But Rabbi said, you see how far the Iyun Yaakov is going?
No, because that's
vision. Pray that every last judge on the court should see clearly that he's Chayav Golos. And it's what? I mean, there's no hint to this.
It's not a distortion of justice then. In other words, if a guy deserves it, you say everyone should see the truth undistorted and clear.
But why should we be motivated to do so? And then we have to come back to Jonathan's point, I think, that we just don't want this person to go to Golos. You know, it's like a death. How can you pray that justice should be distorted? The answer is, I'm not praying that justice should be distorted. I'm praying that in a unanimous decision, all the wise people on that court should see the truth. That's not a distortion of justice. How often is that in such a case? He's tough. My argument against the Yaakov is, again, I empathize with where he's coming from, because I think he felt deeply that this Gemara cannot be understood on a superficial level. But on the other hand, how far can you go? I don't know. Now he quotes a second approach. Okay, you ready for this one? This is the Arth Lanair. You know, guys, that I'm a big fan of the Arth Lanair. But this one, bless you, I can't figure out. Says the Arth Lanair that, you know what his tefillah is? His tefillah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mochel the rotzeach. Should be mochel the rotzeach on this thing. And therefore, he's potter from Golos.
That's what I was thinking.
He's potter from Golos. If he's potter from Golos, then listen to the next line. Yateh HaKadosh Baruch Hu es leiv hadayonim. God will impact on the hearts, meaning the wisdom of the shoftim, of the dayanim, ligmar dino liskus.
That's what I'm saying.
And why? Because he prayed for them. So let me ask one question after the other. I have a barrage of questions on the other one. First of all, am I required, when I say I'm like the Kohen Gadol, right? But is anybody required to pray that I could actually mochel a faith? Who deserves makhila for a faith? What do you say? A person does tshuva. So I'm gonna pray that your chet should be wiped off when you're not willing for the tshuva? Man, if the Kohen Gadol knows that he did tshuva, maybe I get it. I wouldn't want to make such premises. I'd be like, on their side, making such a premise. He's saying, as an absolute rule, the Kohen Gadol should be praying on behalf of the Mechila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this scoundrel, who basically, as we've said a million times, deserves to die. Well, so the answer to that might be Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah, I was going to say, national leadership, and you're going to...
Correct.
Those two, like,
where do we find that Moshe Rabbeinu, prayed on behalf of Mechila, even when the Jews didn't deserve it?
Chetega.
Chetega, Mechenino. So Moshe Rabbeinu is using all his political clout to achieve Mechila for Klal Yisrael after they violated such a serious avera. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, let me go, they deserve to die in divine punishment. But they deserve, so maybe this is our luck in Kohen Gadol. I don't know if I have to run around praying as a rank and file citizen on behalf of other individuals who are guilty of crimes. That's their problem. I'm not responsible. If I visit the sick, so does Allah have to pray on behalf of the sick? Okay, good, that's chesed. I try to do whatever I can to alleviate him of his illness, even through prayer. But to pray on behalf of a sinner, that he should be alleviated from the punishment that he deserves.
No, no, it's not rank and file.
Avram tried to intercede in Sodom.
The answer must be, it's a separate Allah in the Kohen Gadol.
But Avram tried to intercede in Sodom. He wasn't a leader of Sodom. He had no relationship with Sodom. Apparently had no relationship with Sodom. He wasn't the leader of Sodom. He still wouldn't pray for that.
He was a leader.
Well, did he pray for that because he felt that an injustice was being done to the tzaddikim? Or he prayed because he really wanted to save stuff? I think, Jonathan, what I'm asking you, and I don't know the answer to my question, so I'm not stacking the cards here, but I'm asking you a very profound, a very profound theological question. And I think it's relevant in our situation today, You see, if someone has a combination of good and bad, you can ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu and pray on his behalf, God see the good, but when somebody oversteps all bounds, I don't know, then I get confused about it. If he's your enemy, then I wouldn't even allow you to pray on his behalf. If he's out to kill you, it's Abol Ahar V'chol Hashkin Lahar, but that's not the case of Stone.
Well, then you get to for Mayor and Rory, that she says, pray for them to do tshuva, not pray for them to die.
Okay. But again, not when they're holding a gun to your head. I don't know if at that point,
I think at that point, if they do tshuva and say, I'm going to let you go, I think you'd be very happy with that.
Right, but I don't know if your prayer is going to be effective, at that moment. I think a more effective prayer would be, save me from the enemy. That's what I think. Anyway, so let's go with the Aruch HaNer. So number one, the Aruch HaNer says that as a Kohen Gadol, he has a responsibility to pray on behalf of the sinners, that they should be atoned and mechila, they should be mechila by a Kodesh Baruch. That's premise number one. And maybe I can live with that. But premise number two just boggles my mind. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to influence, says the Aruch HaNer, the decision-making process of the judges. Now wait a second. Hold on. Hakol b'dei shamayim, chus v'yir shamayim. Man is challenged and granted freedom of choice to face every situation that he has. And therefore the judges have to make a decision. That's their religious ethical command. Tzedek tirgum. Does God, again, pardon my expression here, they're going to put me into Karen for this, but does God have the right to intervene and influence
that's
a person who's making a decision
what are we
on a religious
God?
Level?
What
that's his possession.
What do we ever pray for?
1 second, John, what?
What do we ever pray for?
We can pray for God to help us, but not that God should remove my freedom of choice. If I'm a judge, I was granted freedom of choice to analyze the situation according to my understanding. I have the evidence in front of me. I have to come to a decision and hand out an honest decision. God is going to step into my brain? Like, is this a robot and program my brain?
Not program, but give you the thoughts. All our thoughts are from God. Good and bad, everything that comes into our head is from God.
But
she's opening up opportunities.
No, let me just goal. A just judge's goal is to do the act of God. In other words, fine, let's say he accepted a bribe.
So I said to say what I want to judge.
Yeah. I'm saying that he chose to, I imagine the night before the court case, the judges are praying, God, please help us make a just verdict. They chose to pray that. They chose to focus their energies and thoughts on focus on justice, and they're praying that God.
So let me ask you a third question, Jonathan. This is the clincher. And this is my third question on the other one. And he doesn't raise any of these questions. I want to know the following. Does Mechila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu have the power to alleviate a person of a punishment?
Yes, I think so.
Yes and no. It depends. If we're talking about a judicial punishment, the answer is no. I'll give you an example. Reuven eats Nevela. A Kizayis of Nevela. What's he chayav? Malchus, correct? He gets 39 lashes. Reuven, before they give him Malchus, he does tshuva. Again, let's assume, again, there are halachas of how to do tshuva, but let's assume we can clarify beyond the shadow of a doubt that Reuven did tshuva. Would it make any bit of difference?
No.
Why not?
It's mardin. That's
because it's a chiv onesh al pi bezdin. Mechila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only effective with regard to Bein Adam L'Makom, with regard to what's called punishments that are B'din Shamayim. But a punishment that's B'dinei Adam, like a death sentence, the man can do tshuva. In fact, the Mishnah describes how he has to do tshuva. And he can do the greatest tshuva in the world. Transform himself into the greatest saint in the world. He will still be executed. And he has to be executed. But because there is no tshuva when it comes to a few Polish bezdin.
So this is the
You're
the
saying half the equation.
Right.
Or the half of the equation is bezdin doesn't take tshuva into account when rendering a verdict.
No, after the verdict.
But does
begin.
God take tshuva into account when it's rendering, when God's rendering his verdict of whether to intercede on man's verdict? Maybe. God can do that. That's his prerogative.
But again, if God is saying that a certain action, a criminal action, engenders a certain punishment through bezdin, if it's proven beyond a shadow of doubt that he didn't commit that crime, then God could be mochel from now until doomsday. That doesn't alleviate. God already set the system into motion
and
imposed an obligation upon the judges. What right, if you pardon the expression, does the divine being have to undermine the system of justice because of his mechila? That mechila has no impact on justice, meaning if the maisim was done, there is a fiyuv. If we can prove the maisim, then we'll implement that fiyuv. God has no right to intervene. What do you say? That's my question.
I think God has every right to intervene. We're praying for him to intervene.
You were saying all along that essentially the bezdin in this case isn't really doing anything. Because it's straight, it's clear, you know, there is no question.
They have the evidence.
Yeah, but I think that sort of rubs against, you know, what our view of what a bezdin is. The bezdin always has to take the information and make a decision. Making a decision means evaluating, right? So that's the space, if you will, where the call for the bezdin and the mechila of Hashem, that which you're taking out.
Right. So I think what Sammy is saying, if I can, I'm just going to try to translate it into my language, just because it's easier for me, is that the gemardin is not just clarification. It's not bezdin is weighing the evidence. But the Gemara Din is really creating a chiyuv. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the right, and he reserves that right for himself, to intervene before the chiyuv emerges. Meaning, I'm working with the premise that the chiyuv is a result of the ritzich. The man was a scoundrel, he was a no-good bug, and he should have taken this and that, and he killed somebody. We call it first-degree murder, but he's manslaughter, whatever you want to call it.
What
right?
exactly
Wait,
happened?
Wait, just give me one more. So therefore, what's the role of bezdin? The role of bezdin is really a technical role. What they do is A, B, C in order to make sure that as a result of this criminal action, justice is meted out, and that's their obligation imposed upon them by the Torah. So basically the way I'm seeing it is that the Ritzich itself engenders the Chiyuv. He has to go into Golos by virtue of the Ritzicha. And the Chiyuv Golos is inherent in the Ritzicha, and that's it. The Ritzicha is an independent entity. Council of Seven, he says, no, that's not so. The Gemar Din of Beis Din is not just a technicality. It's not just to bring the facts to light and then just press on the button because now we know what happened. Therefore, he's Chayav Misa, and any dumbbell would know the. No. The Halacha vests in Beis Din the power to create a Chiyuv Golos. Comes along the Oracle and there, and he says the following. You know what? There's a new element here in the equation. It's not just Ritzicha, Meshogeg, and therefore Golos. No. Ritzicha Meshogeg is the backdrop. But now we need to create a Chiyuv Golos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, step in, undermine that Chiyuv Golos, neutralize. Make sure that that Chiyuv Golos doesn't get established. But you're saying, well, wait a minute, why should this guy who's guilty be let off? The answer is he's not guilty. The guilt is guilt. But the chiyuv, in halachic terms, in legal terms, inheres in the Gemara Din. Therefore, says the Orklaner, if the Kohen Gadol pray on behalf of the Rotzeach, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the right to step into the picture and see to it that there won't be a chiyuv golos. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, if there was a chiyuv golos, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're not a baldover over here. That's already a punishment that you've set into motion. That's Beis Din's job to implement that punishment. You have no right to intervene and meddle into that. But no, the answer is there is no chiyuv golos. If there's no chiyuv golos, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, I was mindful of him, I don't want him to go into golos. I had compassion, and what engendered that compassion? The praise of the Kohen Gadol. And therefore, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to see to it that there never will be a chiyuv golos. Is that saying more or less what you said? Perhaps that's what the Oracle is. I don't know. All right, but most of it will go on. And we spent about a half hour because I don't mind, but it's a fascinating discussion. I'll tell you, for hours I've been thinking about this line in the Gemara. The words of the Gemara just irked me. I just got so irritated when I read these words. Yigmar Dino was chus, my God. You know. Okay. Omar Abaye says, Naktinon, Nikitinon, we have a tradition, Rashi says, that Rashi doesn't say here, but he says it elsewhere, we have a tradition. Naktinon means we have a tradition. I'd love to look in Dr. Frank's book if he has this word Naktinon and how he translates it. But anyway, Rashi here says, we have a tradition.
Translate Mukzokim.
Mukzokim? Okay, so my translation here, according to Rashi and Eruvin, says, Misoris Yodenu Miyamoseinu, we have a tradition. Again, I'd love to see Dr. Frank. I'm a big fan of his. He spent, I think, 11 or 13 years on that book, Practical Talmudic Dictionary. In any case, what is this tradition? And he says the following, Nigmar Dino Vames. Now, you ask me, who cares? I mean, if he dies, he's dead. So, you know, you can't send the guy into Golos. So the Gemara says, "Molichin es atzmosav l'sham." Why? There's a kapara for a person, even after his death, by burying him in the ear mikvah. Could you imagine that? Isn't this the wildest idea you've ever seen? And the Gemara has to derive from a pasuk. You see, "Lashuv l'sheves ba'aretz ad mos hakohen." So the Gemara is bothered by this pasuk. It says, "Lashuv l'sheves ha'aretz." Eizu yeshiva shi ba'aretz. The word ba'aretz is irking the Gemara here because, you know, l'sheves be'ir ha'miklat. But what's ba'aretz? And the Gemara understands ba'aretz means in the air, as we say. In the air means, you know, in dread. It means in the carpet. And the omer is in furo. So he's got to go back to the ha'miklat, and there he's going to be buried as a dead person. And I guess this kapara is going to prevent him somehow from the fires of you know what up there, apparently the river. That's a fascinating idea. I want to come back to this in just a minute, but let's read a little bit by them. Oh no, we learned in Brisa, so again, Rotsef is now in the Yer Mikvah. Mace, he died in the Yer Mikvah, Kodem, Shemace Kohen Gadol. Okay, so he died, so what are you going to do? So the Brisa tells us, Molichin Atzmosov Al Kivri Avosov. In other words, now that the Kohen Gadol dies, we can let the Rotsef out. What does it mean, let the Rotsef out? I mean, he's already dead, he's buried. The answer is we can
reintern.
Well, how do you say it?
Reintern?
Reintern.
Is that the word?
In what? In Kibra. Now take him back to his local cemetery. Local cemetery. You see, how do we know this? In other words, his kapara is complete, he no longer has to stay in the Yermiklad, and he doesn't have to be buried in the Yermiklad. Okay, most Kohen HaGadol, it says, the Pasuk says, Yoshin for Rotzeach al Eretz Achuzos. So we're talking about the death of the Kohen HaGadol, and the Rotzeach is going back to Eretz Achuzos. So the word Eretz we saw is a code word for 1600, for the Kfura. Ezi Yeshivashi Ba'aretz, what does it mean, living in the land, meaning on the land, Achuzos. And the Omer Zu Kfura. Zu Kfura. Wow. It's so fascinating because in modern English, I think they talk about burial as the final resting place. Did you ever hear that phrase?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that might, you know, maybe a biblical source for that phrase, because it says, the Pasuk says Yashuv, and the Gemara says Yashuv means Yeshiva. I would translate yeshiva as resting in this case. You know, your eternal repose. And that's where you get kapara. It's not just stop, you know. So again, the basic premise of this sugya is that the kapara process continues after death. Whether it means that the Kohen Gadol died. Excuse me, what was the first case again that the Rotsef died before he ever got to the Yer Mikvah, correct? And the Kohen Gadol is still alive and well. Or whether it means that he was buried in the Yer Mikvah and then subsequently the Kohen Gadol died. In both cases, we're talking about a process of kapara after death. In the first case, we're talking about a process of kapara by burying. In the second case, we're talking about a process of kapara which completes the kapara because of the death of the Kohen Gadol. Even though, oddly enough, the Rotsef is already dead, so what's kapara for dead person? Apparently kapara has something to do with whether you're alive or dead. Does anybody have any proof for that? Other than this Gemara?
Say that again, sorry.
Does anybody have any proof that kapara applies to a dead person?
I mean, why are we saying Kaddish? Is that not helpful in some way?
I would have given a different example, Yizkar. Yizkar is supposed to be a kapara for the dead. In fact, I once heard from my Rebbe that initially, historically, there was only Yizkar on one day of the entire year, and that was Yom Kippurim, the day of Kapara. And Yom Kippurim is machaper not only for the living, but also for the dead. And Yizkar adds a certain power to the Kapara of Yom Kippurim on behalf of the dead. In fact, the Nusach of Vidui, okay, I'm going to skip a word in my Vidui, you tell me which word I have deliberately omitted. Aval anachnu Chatan. What word did I skip? Vavo Seinu, right? Isn't that a strange vidui? Why am I being misfadah on behalf of my forefathers? And apparently, I have the power through my vidui to effectuate a kapar Yom Kippurim, even my forefathers, even though they're not alive anymore. And that's what it says, that if you've stuck on behalf of the dead, that somehow could have kapar on that behalf. Now, I often wondered, why should there be kapar for someone who's dead? Well, the answer is that judgment is a continuous. For example, if you throw a rock into the river, it's going to have a ripple effect. How long is it going to take until that ripple effect? It may take a while. So if a person does a criminal act during his lifetime, the impact and the repercussions of that action can be felt years, if not generations, down the line. So it could be that every Yom Kippur, the Gemara says that, why don't we say Hallel? The Gemara in Eretz, why don't we say Hallel Yom Kippur? Sifrei Chaim, the Sifrei Mesim, Psuchim Lefanecha. What does that mean? So everybody understands that, you know, here's Reuven, who's alive and well, standing on Yom Kippur in front of the heavenly court. And God has two books, and the question is, which book he's going to write it down? But no. My Rebbe used to say that Sifrei Besim Psukim Tefach means that God re-examines the books of the dead on an annual basis to see what kind of impact their criminal actions continue to have for generations to come, and therefore they still need kapara.
The correctness of the Nachum Avos Seder is a different answer and a different.
I think the Rambam has a Nachum Avos Seder for Kama. In my mind, the correct Pesach is the Rambam. So I'll double check that if I can. But in any event, there's a strange Rambam about why we recite Vidui before Suda Matzekis on Erev Yom Kippur. Our text in the Gemara says Shema Yitarev Daito, which means Rashi says we'll get drunk. Again, I don't know why anyone want to get drunk in the Suda Matzekis, but there's a mitzvah of healing Shasiya, somebody might get drunk. So if he gets drunk, he'll enter into Yom Kippur without saying Vidui, because he's in a drunken state. He won't feel Sabina. It's a guarantee that he recites Vidui before he gets drunk. That's the Pashut Pshat in the Gemara the way we have it. The Rambam in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim has a different text than we want. His text reads, I'm sorry, in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam's text reads, Shema Yichanek Besuda, which Pashut means that he's going to die. Sometimes people die right before Yom Kippur because of the cheshbon of the year before. And God doesn't want to give you Yom Kippur. But then the only problem is, okay, so if he dies, he dies. And Mises Mechaperes. So why is he reciting Vidui? Is this the Vidui before death? And then Rambam has it in Hilchos Yom HaKippur. It's mashma that this Vidui is somehow connected to Yom HaKippur itself. But if he's dead, how is the Vidui going to be effective for Yom HaKippur? And the answer is because Yom Kippur is machaper not only for the live people, but also for the dead people. Okay, the bottom line is that there's kapara even for the dead, and that's what we see in that Gemara. So therefore, the Mises Kohen Gadol is machaper for the Rotzeach, even though the Rotzeach is dead, and now he has license, or his family has license, to remove him from the Eir Mikvah and bury him in his family plot. By the way, it's going to cost them a pretty penny. I'll tell you why, because real estate keeps going up. I think that the cemeteries in the Avikta were a lot cheaper than in the big cities. If you want to get a plot here in Har Yuchot, you got to be a rich man. I mean, now they have the other place here. What's it called on the right side? Har Tamir, it's called. You make a right turn before you get to Har Yuchot. And that's still affordable. I remember a time not so long ago when they opened up the cemetery of Beit Shemesh and they were giving away plots for free. Today you get a plot in Beit Shemesh, of course, New York. Anyway, Nigmar Dino, okay, so now we get back to the Sugya of Kohen Gadol. And this is a very fascinating piece of Gemara. Rabbosai, what's the classical case where the Kohen Gadol will effectuate a kapara on behalf of the Rotzeach? What happened to the Kohen Gadol?
Died.
What happens if he didn't die? What happens if he got deposed? He got deposed. What does that mean, he got deposed? So here's the Gemara's case. Nigmar Dino. So the Rotzeach now has to go to Golos. And what happened next? Not the Kohen Gadol died, but the Nasa Kohen Gadol Cohen, Ben Grushim and Chalutza. Guess what? Two witnesses come in and testify that the mother of this so-called Kohen Gadol was a Grusha, married to a Cohen. And as we learned at great length a few months ago, or I don't know, a year ago, whatever it was, that the status of that Cohen was born to such an illegal marriage is that of a Cohen. He can't serve as a Cohen. He certainly can't serve as a Kohen Gadol. So would that be similar to the death of the Kohen Gadol? Again, I never would have thought of it. I never would have suggested it. But the Gemara says it's a machlokas that it's Pliva, Rav Ami, Rav Yitzchak Nachman. That we don't know who holds what, but Chad Omer going to one, Mesa HaKohuna, the Kohen Gadol died, so to speak, figuratively, halachic. And therefore, the Rotzeach is patur from going to Golos. Again, it doesn't mean. Rashi says Mesa Kohuna about 5 lines up from the bottom of the page. He says Harehu Kimes, the Ein Rotzeach Gol, which means the case of Gvar Din, and he hasn't gone to Gol. And the same would apply if he already was in Gol, and now they determined that the Kohen Gadol was not fit to be a Kohen Gadol. He's a Chol. So according to this opinion, guess what? The Rotzeh goes out of the Yermiklah. Or if it's after Gemara Din, he doesn't have to go into the Yermiklah. Chadomar, the other opinion is, Batla Kahuna means, it's not a Misa of a Kohen Gadol, but there's a clarity, and we clarified what? Was this guy ever a Kohen Gadol? Rabosa, was he a Kohen Gadol?
Never was.
He never was. The whole thing was a bluff. It was a mistake. We didn't know. But he wasn't really a Kohen Gadol. So obviously his death, or his, you know, whether he downsides him, downgrade him, it's not going to be, it's not going to be a machaper. What do you say? Deposed him, he's not going to be a machaper. He's not, he never was a Kohen Gadol. Truth is, I don't understand the first opinion, but let's see if we can clarify this as we go. The Gemara says, Lema, if look to the Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, come here for me. Then in truth, this machlokes, you know, Rami and Yitzchak Naf is an old machlokes, and it's a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah. Back in the time of the Tanoim, this is not related to the Mishnah, the Sefer Trumas. Hoya Omeru Makriv Al Gabi Mizbeach. The Kohen was bringing offerings on the Mizbeach. No, that should be Rush Ben Chalmutz. We clarified that he was not a Kohen Kosher. He was a Kohol. Yezer Omer, Kohol Korbono Shehikriv. You know, for the last 50 years, he's been Makriv Korbonos. But guess what? Lo and behold, we didn't know he was a Kohol. Is all the Korbonos up soon? So you have to disqualify all the Korbonos. Could you imagine, Rabosa, you've been bringing Korbonos? You know, to this Kohen, this is your favorite Kohen. It depends on the Mishnah, but imagine the man served as a Kohen Gadol, excuse me, as a Kohen, for 2 weeks out of every year for the last 50 years. Could you imagine the line, you know, the backlog of all the people who are now bringing replacement Korbanos because they realized that, hey, you know what, the Avodah was Psulim. But in truth, we don't have a choice. Rabbi, you know, this is the opinion that we have to follow, is it not? Rabbi Eliezer makes 1,000% sense. Because at what point did this Kohen Gadol become a chol? This Kohen, I should say. When he's born. It's not like something that was nolad in the middle of his service, of his career as a Kohen. Rabbi Yeshua Makshir, unbelievable. Rabbi Yeshua says all the Korbanos that he brought until this point are Ksherim. From now on, we can't accept his Korbanos. He's no longer a Kohen. So Gemara says this is the identical Machlokes. Gemara makes what's called a Tfluth in one of these, right? Interdependent. Mandiyomar Mesa. According to that, Mandiyomar says that the Rotzeh can go out of the Yer Miklat. Why does he go out of the Yer Miklat? Because the Kohen Gadol, so to speak, died. He is a Kohen Gadol, but he ceases to be a Kohen Gadol. That's Kid Rabbi Yeshua. That reflects the Sheik of Rabbi Yeshua. Because Rabbi Yeshua says that until now, all the Korbanos of Afreya will share it. It's only the Kamal Adel is possible. Uman Yor Batla. So the Uman Yor says Batla Kuhuna, which means that we clarify that he never was a Kohen before, that he never was a Kohen to begin with, and therefore his death cannot initiate any sort of kapara on behalf of the Rotzeh, Akir Rabbi Eliezer, who says that all the Korbanos that he brought until this point are possible.
And then it gets complicated if it's Batla. That's to me. The Rotzeh can never get free. That's as if
you correct.
Know
that.
Rotzeh
can never get free. You're right. That's not
his fault.
Because there was no Kohen Gadol at the time of his Ritzit. Okay, but let's say there was no other one. You know, so we discussed this. That is the din now, and in the classical case where there was no Kohen Gadol, you know, let's say a person did a Ritzit during that period, you know, venue between, you know, between the two. I'm just wondering if we can sneak in another few lines that we can finish this sugya. So the Gemara says, I'll leave with Rabbi Eliezer Kuliyam Lopli. Everyone agrees with Rabbi Eliezer. They're having a situation of Mesa Kahuna. Kipli Yalim the Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says that his avod is only possible Mikan Lahaba. Mandi Omer Mesa holds like Rabbi Yeshua. Mandi Omer Batla, even though he holds like Rabbi Yeshua. But nevertheless, I can look over Rabbi Yeshua Hassam. Only with regard to the avod and all the Karbonos. Tiksiv Berech. Barek Hashem Chelo Ufol Yodav Tirtze Afilu Chalom Shebo. No, the Torah accepts the avoda of a cholom. In this particular case, we didn't know it was a cholom. Amalchach, but here, Afilu Rabbi Yeshua Mode, that his status is certainly not the status of the Kohen Gadol. And therefore, we should say Batla Kahuna. And now we clarify that this man was never a Kohen Gadol to begin with, and therefore his, you know, when we depose him, it doesn't mean that the Rotzeh go out free. Now, that's basically what the Gemara is offering here, is a suggestion that the Torah was Maksha the Karbon, and that's a din in the Karbon. The Kohen is possible, he's not a Kohen, but nevertheless his avodah as a Kohen possible is accepted by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the Karbon is accepted, there's a Ritzi Karbon. But that doesn't have any impact on the status of the Kohen. The Kohen is certainly not a Kohen. And even within the framework of Rabbi Yeshua, we can agree that he wasn't a Kohen, he never was a Kohen Kosher, and therefore he never served as a Kohen Gadol. And his, you know, the fact that we deposed him would not in any way alleviate the Rotzeah of his status of being a Gadolus. Okay then? So we'll stop.
Could this be compared to a puzzle set of Torah?
Is there a halacha that if you find out the Sefer Torah is possible, you can continue from there? No? Isn't that the halacha? I don't think you have to start Korea from the beginning.
I think it depends on where you are in Korea.
Oh,
yeah? I think so.
Basically, what I would say about Kohen Gadol here is that every Kohen is assumed to be kosher. That's called a Cheskas Kohen Kosher. How does that chazaka operate? Is it just a clarification? No. It's more than just a clarification. The fact that he has a chazaka establishes him as a Kohen. Then you can never change that. That's irreversible.
Even if you know the fact.
Even if the fact is that chazaka was not correct. Chazaka works as a koveya. It's koveya the status of a person, the chaloshen Kohen Kosher. Okay, go ahead.